Alright, it's time for another episode of the Christian Reeve Podcast.
Oh, I can't wait! Oh, but if you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like, share, and subscribe. It really helps us out.
Yeah, make sure you leave a review on Podchaser, because if you don't, I'm gonna find you.
Why, mate? Calm down, calm down, calm down. Don't get too excited, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And also, make sure to leave a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.
Yes, and wherever else you happen to be listening to the Christian Reeve Podcast.
Yes. And if you enjoyed the show, please make sure to share it with your friends. Spread the word.
Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. It means the world. Hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Christian Reeve Podcast. Today's guest is a musician, conductor, music director, and author. Her name is Geraldine Anello. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hi, thanks so much. I'm doing great. Excited to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you here. Obviously, we were already talking off camera and I'm like, great, this is great. There's already chemistry here. Fantastic. So many questions to ask you. I don't even know where to begin, but I like to start at the beginning, if possible. So how did you get into music? Where did that journey kind of begin for you? What's the first kind of foray into that field?
My mom had a piano at home and she was trying to learn it. She was just in the very early stages. And I think I was maybe 4 years old, like I'm not sure exactly, but around that time. And I apparently started playing it and just really showed an interest. And one day they were at their friend's house and their daughter was having a piano lesson. So they asked the piano teacher if she could stay a little bit longer and give me a quick tryout. And I kid you not, I remember the tryout. I remember walking down the hallway and then like the door was a little bit open and I peeked in and the piano teacher was there waiting for me and she was playing all the notes really fast in a row from bottom to up of the piano. And I was like, wow, this is so impressive. And like, that's my first memory. It was like, I want to do that. Like, that's so cool. And it's not cool, by the way, but to
it is
that,
cool.
It's so cool because I can do it now.
Yeah, it is cool, man. Yeah. Like, absolutely. Like, I think that childhood wonder element is always kind of something that you carry with you. Like, I carry that with me now. Every time I go on stage, it's like, you feel like, wow, this is crazy, man. Like, yeah. You know, I remember being in my bedroom and like, playing an out-of-tune guitar, and now I'm on stage performing in front of people. What?
Yeah, I've had several times in my life where I don't play for a certain amount of time, which I know is rare for musicians. Like, I've gone, like, maybe a month or 2 months. I'm like, and then every time, the reason I love it is because then I come back, and I'm like, wait, what can I do? Like, it's so cool. Because you forget your own skills when you use it every day. But then when you actually show up after a long period and you sit down, you're like, it's like, really, I can just do that. I can just sit down and do this. That's nice. Like, all right.
I actually took a long, long extended break from music. Like I gave up on it. I quit that dream. And coming back to it, as you say, it's like, it's a bit like riding a bike. Like you, but I feel like the difference is because you change as a person over time. Like the essence of you doesn't change, but you do change. You grow up, you become older, wiser, etc., right? And the way you look at life and approach life is different. So naturally, when you play music, it's going to be a bit different, you know? I found that, I don't know, at least for me, like I'm a better musician now than I was because my approach and mindset towards it is different. Can you speak to that? Is it different for you?
Yeah, I think for me, because of my training in classical and like working professionally, like so much of it is very much like skills, skills, skills at all times. So like my brain is always filled with a million things to do better always when I'm sitting down and playing the piano. So I don't think I have that. And also I'm not performing my material, you know,
okay.
It's other people's materials, whether I'm performing or not, even just when I'm playing, it's not usually mine. So I don't think it affects me necessarily the same way it does for you. But I see what you mean, though. I totally, like, that makes a lot of sense as well. That, like, if I'm singing for fun a song, depending on what's happening in my life, I'm connecting to the song different.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a contradiction in what you're saying there, because you say, okay, well, it's not my music, so I don't feel it the same way. But that's not true. Come on.
Yeah, I think if I sit down and I haven't played in a while, it always starts with skills. It always starts with very clear, like, you know, How's the tone? How's the touch? How's the dynamics? How's the phrasing? How's the pedaling? How, like, immediately there's a giant checklist of like making sure it's happening at the same time. How's the balance between the hands? How's the balance between the fingers? Am I like, and it just fills my brain so hard. I'm not there really from a place of just what I'm expressing. Then maybe the second time I play the piece, I'm gonna get there, but it's not the first place that I start with if I haven't played in a long time.
Interesting. So there aren't like any songs or artists that you play and maybe like it kind of hits you on a personal level. Like for example, like if I ever play Radiohead songs, for some reason just hits me emotionally,
Yeah, I
just
have
hits me.
Wicked, like the musical Wicked.
There it is.
No Good Deed, that song. I mean, oh, and like, and I'll sing it. So that's the thing. I'm a professional pianist. I'm not at all a professional singer. Vocal coach, yes, but not a singer. And so I think my fun in music is really when I sing, actually, because then I can let go a little bit of all of that and just do it for fun. So when I'm for fun singing like Wicked or things that no one ever wants to hear me sing in the world, then yeah, I really connect deeply. As far as music, a lot of Mozart. Mozart tends to do that, like when he goes into minor modes, and I'm like, oh, I've shared in some of these moments I've had since I'm like a teenager. I'm like, oh, there's this one bar again.
It's like the one thing I've noticed about classical musicians as well is like their interpretations of said pieces. Like some people invoke so much emotion into it where others don't. Like I'll give you an example. One of my favorite pieces is by Chopin, Frédéric Chopin. I think it's Nocturne in C minor. And I've heard it like a bazillion times, right? But there's only a handful of people that I've heard play it that play it with like a real emotion there. Do you know what I mean? And some of that comes down to like how quickly they play the piece and stuff like that. But I can't put it into words. Like, I feel like some pianists just have more feeling in their playing where others don't. I don't know.
And the question always is it the feeling or is it the phrasing? Because truthfully, we can't really know when we're listening. I mean, when you're seeing someone perform, you can have maybe an idea depending on their body language, maybe, but even that, could just be personal. But then when it's a recording, you don't even have the visual element. Like,
That's
it's hard
true.
to tell. It's like that person could be feeling, and I know that because again, I've been a vocal coach for so long. I've worked with a lot of singers, including young singers, and that's such a big part of their training. Is that they're told all the time, feel it, feel it. But if you talk to them, they're feeling it. The thing is, it does not come across in what they're doing yet. That's where the training comes in. So because I've seen it so much, I'm very careful now at inferring any kind of idea of what's happening in the, inner experience that's coming across in the outer experience. Because I've had on the opposite end many performances where people come to me after and they're like, oh my gosh, you were so in it. And meanwhile, sometimes maybe it was a very anxious performance for me and I was just nervous the whole time. Or maybe I was, it was another performance and it was cool, but I wasn't feeling as strongly as people thought I was. So it's just really hard sometimes to know.
How do you get someone to like sing with feel like let's say someone you just know they're just not putting any emotional feelings into it. Like how do you say that to someone? How do you approach that? How do you get them to feel?
That's what acting teachers are there for. I mean, like, usually it's not so much going to be with me as a vocal coach because it's not really my place. I can give the feedback of like, oh, I wonder if there's something you can work on with, in your acting class about this when they're in school.
No, I'm talking about specifically like they're singing. So
That's
like,
what I'm talking. Oh, but it's acting. If you're singing, you're acting because it's.
interesting.
Oh, yeah. So whether you're in the musical theater schools or the opera schools, when it comes to singers, because of the lyrics, they are acting. It's acting. So a lot of times what they start with in their training is remove the music and speak the lyrics with feeling. So that's kind of like step number one. Yeah, so it's a whole training. I
Interesting.
mean, it takes them years, honestly. Like acting while singing is a really difficult thing. I mean, acting in and of itself is very hard, and it takes them years to learn how to connect to the emotions, how to then perform that emotion. It takes them years.
I've just never heard like music described in this way, or the collected in this way to acting before. Like, because I'm an actor as well, and for me, they're like two different. Like, there's similarity. Like, certainly from a performance element, when you're on stage, absolutely, it's a performance. You're act. You know, you. And I find that about myself when I'm on the stage. Like, I'm still figuring out who is me. What do I do when I'm on stage? You know what I mean? Like, some things feel right where other things don't.
There's two ways. So I'm talking about opera and musical theater, and those are obviously you're acting as a character. You're not yourself. So if you're singing your own songs, now you don't have the acting element because they're already you. So you don't have to act as yourself. Maybe to some extent you have to embody the feeling of the song, but that's, I think that's where there's a big difference with pop rock and with musical theater and opera. Because, you know, in pop rock and all these songs, it's more about the feeling of the song. Like, what's the song really? Is it mostly sad? Is it mostly sexy? Is it mostly, you know? And then plus a certain, on top of that, a layer of like joy of performance. Like, look at me be good at what I do. Look at me give you this feeling. Like, there's an element of that that you completely get rid of in musical theater, because opera doesn't have pop rock, of course, but you can have pop rock songs in musical theater. And so that's something I actually discuss with the students, because sometimes when they're trying to then do pop rock, because of their training, they end up acting those songs a lot when they don't need to, unless those pop rock songs are in a piece of musical theater where they're in a character and where it's 100% story-led and not music-led. So, I mean, I love that stuff. I can go on and on about it, like the specificity of songs and how you perform them. But that's why there's so, that's why I mean, what I was saying, I start with skill. It's like, it can't just be a blanket thing of like emotion. It's like, well, I mean, there's more to it.
I think it's just to each their own, isn't it? I know my girlfriend would love this. She's like into theater and stuff, and I just can't stand it personally. But that's the beauty of it, isn't it? Like, we're all different. We all have different, like, things that we're into and stuff. And I think it's just like, if it clicks for you, it doesn't.
And part of it is understanding, right? I think it's just like sports. It's like, if you don't know the rules of the sports and you're trying to go see it, you're not going to like click with it. You know, and I think a lot of people do that with sports and naturally understand it, but then it doesn't get put onto music. Like, do you not like it, or do you not have the rules yet to understand what you're looking at? And maybe once you have the rules, you know, you still have people who don't like sports, even though they know the rules. Then you know you don't like it.
Yeah, but no, I agree. Like, you need to give something a chance. Like, I've given things like theater and musicals a chance. I've sat down, I've watched it, I've tried to get into it, and I'm like, I just can't. But I'm happy I've at least tried, because nothing bugs me more than when someone won't give something a chance and they say, oh, this is terrible. And I'm like, well, how do you know? You don't know. You've not tried, you know?
I have to say, I will not watch a horror movie, and I don't like it. I know I don't like it.
That's fair enough. You know, why would you pay to see something that just terrifies you? Like,
I've seen the excerpts, you know, when they do the advertisements.
Yeah.
And that's scary enough. I already don't like that.
I think with horror, it's, I don't know, I'm a big horror fan, but I got to say, I'm a fan of like classic horror, like psychological horror, I think is way more interesting. Like,
hearing the
words. It's more interesting. Like, the classic guy stalking the victim, but all you see is him driving, like his hand or something, driving, stalking the victim. Like, that's interesting. Jump scares, that's not fun. That's just, what? That's not, come on. If that's all it is now, it's junk. From the makers of, it's like, Outside. It's just, I don't know, it's just silly. Like, it's
already,
it's just been like that for so long now that it's just, that's just horror movies. But there are good horror movies out there, independent movies, I think. I think that's the thing as well with movies these days. Check out what the independent filmmakers are doing. Doing some interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Just on that note, I did a musical theater piece called We Are the Tigers. That was a horror musical. And so I was in the room when they were performing, when they were practicing the fighting and the combat piece. And I was in the room where they were practicing with the fake bloods. And so the reason I'm saying I was in the room is because I saw the whole process. I knew all the tricks. But guess what happened the minute they shut off, they like turned down the lights, put the actual stage lights on and the actual costume, and somebody actually got murdered on stage? I screamed. Like, I had no idea what was coming, even though I spent weeks knowing what was coming. So, yeah, I
remembered
every time.
I remembered hearing about when, was it The Woman in Black, when that was on the stage, when that was like popular. And it was always, I think it's always been on, but like around the time that the film had come out, it was back in theater, and I remember hearing stories about how the woman would go like through the what do you call them, the bleachers, like through the crowd basically. And I thought that idea was terrifying. Just no, but cool in a way, immersive, you know, because sometimes that could be cringe. Like, I've had instances where that's been cringe and I'm like, oh, I don't like that. You know, when it's like, oh, let's all, you know, pretend like it's High School Musical and we're all part of the show and we're all dancing together. Like, I don't like that.
Well, I don't like when I feel forced, you know?
Yeah,
like
right. That's what, like, I mean. Yeah.
I can't hear you. You're like, you're not paying attention because everybody screamed. Like, and it's like, of course, you're just trying to like pump everybody up. But it's like, I was pumped before I came.
there's something to that, I think. Like, you're allowed to be a passive viewer and not have to like take part in something. Like, that's okay. I think that should, do you know what I mean? Like, it's
100%. I'm not a screamer. Like, I'm careful with my voice because screaming is bad. I'm like, I'm really happy to be here, but I will not be like, yeah, like, no, I want to protect my instrument.
It's fair enough. Makes sense. What's been the most challenging experience in your career?
Oh my gosh, so many. I don't know that I can think of one. I think something that might be hard, not just for me, but, you know, having interviewed all the people and those conversations with the people in my book that comes back, is the relationship between your love of music and your instrument and the music business.
Yeah.
And I think when you're a professional musician, that's a hard thing, that people outside will be like, oh, you're so lucky, you're doing what's your passion. But you're like, once it's an industry and you're in that industry and in the business and it's a great business, there's a lot of challenges part to it, of course, like any job. And managing that back and forth when your job is never just your job, it always really comes from your heart and your soul. And having that peace, that management over time. And it starts young, because even when you're a music student, you know, you've already been playing for 10 years, 15 years. It's already a big thing. So it's kind of, I think, a constant.
I'll say this. Because I was thinking about this before today's show. I was reevaluating my goals in general, not just music, but the podcast, everything. And I was reading a thread on Reddit about podcasts. And the original thread was, how did you deal with failure? As in people that gave up their shows. And there was one particular person that chimed in, someone who'd been doing it for like 20 plus years. And they said, you need to reevaluate the way you measure success, the metrics that you use. And I was sitting there looking at that. It's not the first time someone said that to me. But it made me think about like your goals. What are your goals? So if you're a musician and you're watching this, you're listening to this, and you're thinking about getting into the industry, I would say, make clear goals. What is it? Clearly define what it is you want to do. Don't just think, I want to be at the very top, at the very, like, the biggest star. Like, that can happen, but as we've established, it's a business. The chances of making it in any business are like one in a million. That doesn't mean you shouldn't do it, but it means, like, take me getting back into music right now. It's formulaic. I just did a photo shoot with my friend Jessie Turton. Check her out. In preparation for this record that I'm making. And then I was working on, okay, what is it I want to put out? At least a single, a few singles, but I think I need to make a record. Then I looked at what I've written over the last 3 years and I'm like, this is three records, but I need to scale it back and just take it step by step. Point I'm trying to get to, clearly defining what you want to do. So, okay, I want to release a single, make the single, release the single. Okay, I want to make a record, make the record, release the record. I think people get too caught up in, oh, I need to like get like millions of streams on this. I need to get millions of listens. Da-da-da-da. Sound familiar, guys? The amount of times I've said that about like this podcast, and I looked at the fact that, you know, what matters more is the few people that are listening to the show each and every week and have been for the last 4 years. Thank you so much for listening and watching the show. Musicians, if people are checking out your music regularly, be thankful for that. like, oh my God, like, celebrate that, you know. I think it goes in stages as well. It's step by step. So obviously we want to make this our career. Like, I want things like acting and music and creative endeavors to be my career. That's the goal. Right now I'm still pulling shifts in hospitality to make ends meet, and I hate it, but it is what it is. But here's another thing, another element to that. There was a point where, you know, I was locked into places and I had to be at this place, this office for, you know, Monday to Friday, or this business, you know, on weekends. Now I'm not locked in anymore because I do agency work, because I found a way that would enable me to be available whenever to play gigs, do podcasts. It's a Monday and we're doing this podcast. Do you know what I mean? Like, that wouldn't be possible if I was locked into a standard job. My point with this, because I know it sounds like a big rambling thing, is like, you got to like look at exactly the life that you want to lead and start trying to construct that piece by piece, and accept that it's going to take time and you have to be patient and keep working on it, and accept that there's going to be more failures and rejections than successes. But don't let that stop you. Keep going, keep pursuing. And maybe, just maybe, you might be successful.
Oof. Yes. And I think part of it too is like journey versus goals. And sometimes, you know, if you focus too much on the goals, then you're forgetting the importance of the journey. And many people, like you said, don't even have the goals. So then it's all about journey. But the reason it's important is because as you're heading towards your goal, you may realize your goal is not actually what you're after. And I've talked with many people, you know, in these conversations I had, like one of them was Catrice Barnes. She was the music director at Saturday Night Live for so many years. She's passed now, but something interesting in the conversation her and I had is, for the longest time, she was a vocalist. She wanted to, you know, be leading her own band and be famous as a front person. And, you know, when she got Saturday Night Live, which for many musicians and pianists would be a dream gig, you're paid well, it's your fame, you know, you're really at the top of the industry. And for her in the beginning, it wasn't that, but it became that, because then she realized, oh, I actually don't like the repetition. And if I had the success I wanted leading my band, I would be repeating the same thing all the time. But at Saturday Night Live, I get to do something completely different day to day and week to week. And that suits me better. And so you could look at her story and be like, well, she failed at her goal. Meanwhile, for her, the journey informed what the goal actually should be, which it turns out she already had. And sometimes things go backwards like that. And many people shared stories like that in the book. And so, you know, we think if I achieve my goals, I will be happy, or it will prove that I'm good enough. And a lot of times people reach their goals and they're disappointed by them. They're like, oh, this is just another day, like all the other times. And sometimes you have the pride that you did it, but it's just, it's more of a complicated and complex thing to achieve goals than it's made out to be.
There's a few things in it. I mean, I've had, my partner said this to me, my friends have said this to me, my followers, everyone has said this to me, and I agree. And you said it as well. If you're putting your happiness on achieving these goals, like, I won't be happy until this happens, then you'll never be happy. Even when you get it, as you say, because let's say tomorrow you become this big successful musician, you know, you're a star, you're known the world over. You might hate it. It might be the worst thing ever. As you said as well, the music business, very different to what people think it is. I've had quite a few musicians on the show, people who've had record labels, people who do it independently. They all tell interesting stories. And suffice it to say, it's not the glamour and glitz that people make it out to be. There can be that. It's not all miserable, but the reality is it is a business, and there's an ugly side to it, and there's a brutal side to it. I mean, like, for instance, touring, I think, is a really big example of that. It's more so for like rock and pop artists that this is the case. But, you know, touring between places, you know, most of your time is on a bus, you know, cramped up. And then you go to a cold building and you're in the backstage and you're doing that. Like, it's not what people think it is. Like, I remember there was a really excellent a collection of interviews on YouTube for like a heavy metal I think it's Loudwire, it might be, I can't remember. Anyway, they had a bunch of different excerpts from various different interviews over the years of all these musicians, some up and coming, some who big, you know, famous musicians, and they all were just like, yeah, touring is the absolute worst. Like, just, this sucks. And you'd think, like, oh, but you get to perform in front of like 100,000 people. That's amazing. And it's like, yeah, I'm sure it is for the 2 hours that that happens. But what about the rest of the day, the rest of the week? Do you know what I mean? It's, you have to think a lot about that. Like, when I look at my life and what I want to do, I want to be full-time in creative endeavors. So I want to be able to earn money regularly through acting, music, podcasting, content creation. That's the goal. That's the aim. That's an achievable goal. Whether or not I become famous or successful, like as in like a big megastar or something, is besides the point. That would be nice, I suppose, but at the same time, it's not my goal. Never has been. But I did think about it years ago and I was like, oh, that would be nice. But now, especially as I've seen what it does to people as well and how it changes people's lives, sometimes for the worse, does not look like the one. Do you know what I mean? I think it depends on things like your level of fame, your level of it's interesting as well. Like, you see big successful musicians that seemingly have it all and they're still just miserable. They're just not happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if, as you say, maybe at one point they didn't think about like their goals, you know, they just kind of obsessed over this idea of being the best. And I don't know, like, if there's any point to that. Like, it's, I feel like at its core, music, you know, is about your relationship with said thing. You know, everyone has a different relationship to music. And it doesn't have to be as a musician. It can be just in general. Like, you think about what music means to you might mean nothing to another person. When it comes to, you know, how you play an instrument, how it makes you feel, how the music makes you feel, like, that in its core should always be at the forefront of what you do with music and creativity. You know, if it's just, oh, I need to make this record so I can make money, I need to pump out this many things so that I can sell this merch, so that I can do that, but then where's the fun in that? You know, if it's just about that, I mean, like, then I don't know, it just sucks the fun out of it.
It's interesting because happiness and fun, they're not necessarily related to the creative experience. I think as a lot of times, creatives on the opposite are very motivated by heartache and things that hurt and transcending the pain of the human condition into other things. So I don't know that happiness and fun are necessarily a necessary part of either the process or even a wanted desire of the goal. Because if you are able to make all this thing out of, you know, all these emotions, and then suddenly, you know, it on the other side, you no longer have access to what's giving you your inspiration. That's another problem in and of itself. But that's again for the creators. And then you also have those straight performers that are very, you know, inspired, but in a different way.
I always find like musicians tend to make their best music at the time that they were struggling, or at least, you know, like Eminem comes to mind, for instance. Early in his career, you know, he's rapping about what it was like growing up in Detroit and how much that sucked. And people could relate to that. And like, a lot of people are like, yeah, I don't live in Detroit, but like, I can relate to growing up poor and dealing with all these injustices in society.
That's the story of all artists. I mean, you look at poets of the 19th century and you look at philosophers. I mean, that's the history of art and creation. And also that's because that's the human condition.
Right.
I mean, happiness can never be anyone's goal, because the minute you are wondering if you have it, you don't.
So, damn.
You know, you can have goals, but separated from happiness. Happiness is a byproduct of moments, I think. I'm here, I can talk about music. I don't know if I can talk about philosophy, but I know that's not my goal. Happiness, a sense of drive, yes. A sense of flow, yes. A sense of achievement, sure.
You know, one thing I've realized is I want freedom. That's big. Like, I look at, like, when when I'm doing music, when I see other people doing music, and I see the types of people they are, and I'm like, that's how I want to feel. I want to feel a sense of freedom. I don't want to be told, you need to do this. You must be at the office at this time. And, you know, these 40 hours are deducted from your week every week. Like, I don't want rules. Mm-hmm. I want freedom. I want those flow states, as you say, like moving between things like that. Like, I love this idea of how my life is now, where it's like, okay, today I'm doing a podcast. Tomorrow, what am I doing tomorrow? I don't know what I'm doing tomorrow. Wednesday, I'm sorry?
Tomorrow I'm flying to Arizona.
I mean, yeah, that would be like the ultimate dream, wouldn't it? Like, I'm flying the world, living like a rock star. But no, but like, I want that sense of freedom. You know, like, I don't think you have to be super rich or super, you know, like a big celebrity to attain that. I think it's just more about, as I said before, setting those goals and working towards those goals. And as you say, like, not going like, I have to achieve these in order to be happy. Like, I think for me, I've learned so much in pursuing my goals and chasing these dreams. And lately I've really struggled with putting everything on like, oh, this isn't working out. You know, I'm a failure. I've said that a lot. And it's not true. It depends how you define it. You know, like I said earlier, I have a handful of people that listen to this show and have been for years. And that's amazing when you really think about it. Because you get a lot of people that passively check something out and then they might never again. And then you get people who are fans for life. And that is huge. And you really think about it. Like, there's a band that I listen to, and I've been listening to them since like 2010. I found them randomly on Last FM, if anyone remembers that website. Whoop, whoop. And they'd put an EP out for free to download. And I was like, oh, amazing. Like, free music. Like, and back then, guys, this is, it's a different internet, different world. Being able to download music for free was like, what? Amazing. They're called A Great Big Pile of Leaves. Very like, it's like my comfort band. I love them. Anyway, I've been listening to them since then, and it's never stopped. And there's obviously like a relationship there, which is personal, and it is what it is. But it's like incredible that it's lasted that long and continues to move through the times. And I think that as an artist, the relationship you have with the people that do care is huge. If you're too caught up in, it all needs to be, I need to be getting thousands, millions of followers, I need to be doing this, that, and the other. Like, it's just never going to make you happy. And, you know, I'm saying this from experience, because I focused on that way too much and it made me miserable. And I wasn't looking at things like, for instance, this is episode 264. Of my podcast.
That's a huge accomplishment right there.
It is. Oh, it's amazing. I get to talk to people like yourself about things that I love. You know, like that. How is that not a success when you really think about it?
I mean, for podcasts, I heard most people drop at like, I think the 22nd podcast. So anybody that makes it to 23 is a success, because they've already made it further than the vast majority of podcasters. So that's the mark.
I think you have to ask why you're doing it as well. Like, we bring it back to music for a second. Like, it's the same thing. Why are you writing this music? Why are you performing? Like, why are you doing it?
Exactly. Are you doing it because it's a deep inner need from your heart and your soul to come out with this thing? And then once it's out, to me, it's very much like children. You know, like, a lot of people have this deep desire to have children, and I think for artists it's different, because you already put something out of you into the world, and that process doesn't fully get completed if you don't actually hand it over to the world, if you just keep it to yourself, just like a child. Like, you can keep it inside, like, as a mother you gotta bring it out into the world, and the art is the same way. And you don't know the outcome. And then if, on the contrary, you're like, okay, I want to make X amount of money, or I want it to reach X amount of people, you end up usually with a product that people can sense is not made for art's sake, is not made with love and care and craft, right? It's like those Hollywood movies that people are, yeah, it just had this checklist of, okay, sex sales, we have some of that, violence sales, we have some of that, people like this actor, we'll have this actor, and then they do this check marks, and Yeah, it's entertaining, but it's not going to move you the way that something that was done with full artistic integrity will be moving you.
Do you know, I honestly agree with you like 1,000% on this. I've really noticed this both in music and in filmmaking over the last, I want to say 10, 15 years, give or take. With movies, I feel like the best movies, last best movies were made in like the 90s. After that, I mean, it's not to say good movies were never made again, but like, it's just lacking in heart. I don't know how to put it. Like, with pop music now, it all just sounds the same.
Yeah,
There's
that's what people
no.
in Hollywood are saying when they're working in the industry. Apparently, right now, and I don't know that world as well, but from what I'm understanding, there's a lot less people employed at the moment, and there's a lot more hurdles to go through to get projects accepted. So, where there were people in place who would greenlight projects based on their own connection between the business world and between the artistic world, and there would be kind of this one person deciding for every studio. Now you've got these different layers of suits who have no connection to the art that are making these decisions strictly for business sake, and it's really now starting impacting. And that's what they're saying. They're like, people are not watching as much
Yeah.
because the results are less good.
Well, it's like how many films have you seen where it's like, oh my God, it's got all these incredible actors in. Oh, this is going to be amazing. And then the film absolutely sucks. Why? I'll tell you why. Storytelling. Every film, TV show, whatever it is, sounds obvious, but like it has to have a good story. It has to grip you. If the story sucks, it doesn't matter how much money you poured into it or how many big celebrities you put on the net. Like that'll at least attract people's attention. Like if, I don't know if you put like Morgan Freeman and Judi Dench in it, like that's going to get people's attention and they're going to check it out. But doesn't mean it's going to be good. You know, the story is at the core of what it is. And I think that that's the same with music. Like you can write songs all day, but whether or not they'll be any good comes down to, I would say, how much heart is put into that, you know? Like, for instance, there's a scene. I'm a big fan of Johnny Cash. And in the movie Walk the Line, there's a scene in it where Johnny's playing some like gospel music or whatever and trying to get a record deal. And this guy's just staring daggers at him, just going like, it sucks. Like, you know, I heard this a million times. I don't, he says something to the effect of like, I don't believe you when you sing this. Like, I don't believe that you really, it is real. Like, I don't buy it. Like, basically sing me something real. And he's like, all right, you want something real? I'll play something real. And he plays something he wrote when he was in the military, Folsom Prison Blues. And you can just see like, the guy cock his eye or his look and just start like feeling it and going like, yeah, that's something real right there. And I think a lot of the time when it comes to musicians and their fans and everything, it's the connection you have with your audience, like what that song means to you. When you go on stage, do you really feel it? Like when I write music, I write about what I know because I feel like that makes sense. And sometimes it's funny, you know, it'd be something like I wrote a song called She's a Ghost, which is about people like ghosting you. Like, and then I like a double entendre, so the chorus is like, she's a ghost, like, you know, like she's not there. Yeah, silly. But then there's other songs I've written where like I'll write about, you know, feelings of loneliness or rejection, unrequited love, like real emotions that I don't feel that way anymore, but they're forever contained within that. Like you pour your emotions and your soul into that art, and now other people are going to connect with it because it's relatability. We do these things because we want to connect with each other. When there's no connection, people don't care, and that's why these movies are bad. And this is why like certain songs are just like, you know, because there's no connection there. There's no soul in there.
I believe the emotion in the art of create in the moment of creation is so important. What you're speaking of, you're feeling lonely, and at that moment, you're because the what you're writing with your heart that really transpires, and after that moment of creation. Whether it's a week later, a month later, a year later, the craft comes into play. And I think a lot of people forget that part. Like, we'll go one or the other. Either they have the craft, they did the studies and all that, and then they forget about the emotional component. That happens a lot in contemporary opera writing, I found. And then a lot of people are very connected to the emotions and they feel very strongly about creating, but then they don't follow through with the craft. And then they don't understand why things are not really ticking. And it's like, it might be small things, but you always need feedback on your artistic work, no matter what it is. And not feedback from friends and family, feedback from people who have the craft, you know, and from different of them, not just the one all the time, but several people, you know, like actually going and paying for, you know, if it's a book, paying for editors, and if it's a song, go paying for, you know, someone who is, you know, if it's a song with a guitar, like who is a professional guitarist that maybe has an idea of how this one moment can tick, and somebody who's a songwriter who is going to be able to say, well, you know, if here the bridge will do this, it gets into so many nitty gritty details that it really can amplify the emotion to such in such a way that to just leave it as, oh, because this was such a pure emotional moment, then the art is pure behind it, and to alter it would mean changing the integrity of my soul. No, on the contrary, you're following the integrity of your soul by adding this other layer on top that will make it impacts even more so with the audience.
Yeah, I mean, like it's, I think so it's difficult with feedback. Like I understand when you write, like I feel it, like I know how to take criticism, but I'm not going to sit here and say like, it doesn't hurt. Of course it does. It's something that's come from your soul.
Feedback is not criticism. Feedback isn't saying, you know, this isn't great. It's like, well, what would happen if, because I've worked in musical theater, like it's such a collaborative environment. I can no longer do anything without a process of back and forth, you know, after, again, the art of creation or whatever it is. But you need people to be like, okay, well, here, what if here, instead of, you know, the guitar continuing this rhythm through the bridge, we did this other thing, that way the bridge stands out the way you intended it to. And so it's actually elevating what you meant to do even further.
That's different.
That's what I'm talking about.
You're talking about when you're constructing something and you're asking essentially, yeah, for constructive feedback, as in like to make this thing better.
No artist needs criticism, because that will just kill your spirit of criticism.
Yeah, but you're going to get it. The thing is, you're going to receive that. Like, look, I've been doing acting, music, all this stuff for like better part of like 5 or 6 years now, and I can tell you, people. I'm sure you get it too. People will tell you what they think. It does count. Everything counts.
Well, in the sense of things to take in and do something with, it's like, yeah, it exists out in the world the same way there's like dog poop on the street in New York City. But
I think it depends, though, doesn't it? Because like, I'll give you a really good example, and my listeners have heard this one before, but I think it's valid. Like, I remember one time years ago, someone put like a really horrible comment on one of my podcasts. Right, I did a really really long podcast with someone. It's about close to 2 hours, I think, and we spoke at length on a myriad of topics. It was a really good, really good interview, but someone in the comments was just destroying me, and they said, like, you know, wish he would shut up and just let this person speak. They felt like I was talking over her, and I was like, well, lol, I did. I let her speak for like 2 hours. What do you mean? But basically, they were annoyed because this person was telling stories, and then I would share stories with said person, and there was a back and forth. And they said something like, no one wants to hear your boring stories. I won't be listening to this show again. Now, a bunch of people chimed in, supported me in that, you know, and it was great. And I could have taken that and been like, oh, I should never do this again. I could have just ignored it. Or I could have looked at it and gone, you know what, despite this person being really horrible with their delivery, there's something to be taken from this. And the thing to be taken from it is, anytime you have a guest on a show and you're an interviewer, you make sure your guest gets as much time to speak, tell their story, and it's not all just about you. Like, this show might have my name on it, right? But it's all about my guests.
Podcasts are very different from a creative art that you're working on before you're presenting to an audience. If you're writing a song and you're, you know, recording it, you have time and space to redo it and finesse it. Podcasts, we're recording it one time. We're not acting. We don't know what we're going to say. We don't know how long. So I think it's very different when it's somewhat live. It's not live because it's still pre-recorded, but it's not redone. There's no stopping and rephrasing. You don't have that room. people, nobody wants to see it with that level of finesse, actually, because what makes it great is that it's a lot more raw. But I'm really talking
about the art with that. Project
where you have a lot of time to finesse it.
I disagree. I think that at the end of the day, there are going to be shows that are like that for sure, where it's, as you say, more raw, but like your approach is everything. I can't count how many times I've hammered this, but structure is essential in a podcast. Having,
sure, but just I'm saying afterwards, like if you're writing a song, structure is also important, but you have time afterwards to keep on changing elements until it's, very strong, and then you can present it to the world. It's very different than, say, if you go to an improv comedy show where they're going to come up with songs. Well, I've done those, and like you, where I was playing the piano and I would find the moment where to start and make the actors sing the song. And that's very different kind of artistic input that they're doing, because there's no do-over for them. So yes, of course, we all have to do our best, but of course the level of the song is going to be very different from a song that was written, was worked on, was recorded, the recording was worked on. You know what I mean? And they're both fantastic and two different kinds of art, but of course you can't, you know what I mean? It's different.
Yeah, no, I guess my overall point with it all is that, like, I take any and all feedback, criticism, whatever it is, I always take it into account. I might discard it, as you say, like some shit on New York City Boulevard or whatever, but a lot of the time I don't, and I look at it. And I go, is there anything to be gained?
I think it's a matter of quantity. Like, if most people are saying the same feedback, yes.
Maybe.
But because everybody will always say the opposite. I mean, I during COVID, was doing a lot of live interviews of Broadway musicians, and I heard the exact opposite. They were like, well, you should share more of yourself. And then other people were like, you're talking too much. And you're like, when everybody's saying, I can't be all things to all people. So that's what I meant by discarded. Now, if most people are saying the same thing, then of course that's important. But I think I was just separating it from what I was saying of actively going towards people who know the craft. It would be very different if have like the top podcaster giving you feedback. It would be very different from people who have never done a podcast in their lives giving you feedback.
No, you're spot on. I know where you're coming from on this. Like, it's important to consider who is giving said advice and what it means, but I don't think it's any less valid necessarily. Like, I think it depends. Do you know what I mean? If someone who's never done a podcast in their life, for argument's sake, is telling you like, oh, your structure's all wrong, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad, and then someone who's in the industry and who's successful is giving you different advice, then I know whose advice I would rather take, right? In that instance, yeah. But then that's not to say that person that has no experience or nothing, like that their words aren't in some way valid. I think it depends. And I think one really important thing I want to raise is like, what do you think? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, you take all this stuff into account. And I gave this example recently. I do the Captain Picard Star Trek approach. Imagine you're sitting in the room, you're taking on board everything that everyone's saying. You're like, And then you make your decision. This is what I think. This is what I'm going to do. Like, I, as you said before, I don't think it's good to kind of double back and be like, oh, they said I talk too much. I guess I talk too much. Like, and when I received that comment, you notice I still talk on my podcast. I just choose the moments. I try to make this about being a discussion, a real conversation that someone is, I call it like the fly on the wall thing. So the listener is essentially the fly on the wall, or maybe you're sitting at a bar and you're listening to this interesting conversation, What would you say is the most rewarding experience in your career?
Definitely opposite of what I said earlier about goals, but definitely accomplishing my goals. I wanted to play on Broadway and I did it. I wanted to conduct on Broadway and I did it. I wanted to publish a book to help musicians and I did it. Those things really mattered to me. And they were long haul. Like, I found there's a correlation for me as to the length and the difficulty of the goal and the pride in the achievement of it. Because I've had other goals that are great, but there was a lot less effort on my part to get it, or there was a lot less time it took to get there. And so I found like the kind of the more arduous it is, the more I have this sense of pride on the other end of like, yeah, I did it. It's like you stand a little bit taller. You're like, okay. Because for so long you're wondering if you're wasting your time or if it's just a pipe dream. And then when you do it, there's something that relaxes inside of you. You're like, okay, I really did it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard when you're not making a lot of progress towards your goals to keep pursuing it. I mentioned that earlier, that I'm desperately trying to kind of refocus how I look at my goals and try not to get defeated when not much progress is being made, because you know, you just have to keep pushing. Do you know what I mean? You have to keep trying. For instance, take my podcast as an example. There's over 260 plus episodes. How many podcasts are out there? Last time I looked on Spotify, it's like 5 million plus. That's a lot of stuff out there. How you're a goldfish in an ocean. Do you know what I mean? Like, so standing out is hard, but that doesn't mean you should stop chasing your goals, because a lot of people will give up and go, oh, how am I ever going to achieve this goal? How am I ever going to do it? But the people that keep pursuing the goals are the ones that will achieve it. You wanted to play on Broadway.
Mm-hmm. And you don't also know how things are connecting.
Exactly.
You know how things connect together either. So it's like, maybe the podcast is going to do this. That's not expected. And then, you know, who knows, in 10 years, you might end up doing something that's thanks to the fact that you had this podcast this long.
I think about this a lot. Do you know, like, it's weird. Like, sometimes I'll go out and I'll be like, I should go out now with my friends or to this place, because who knows who I might meet. Or even when I do hospitality stuff, it's crazy, like, the people I meet. Like, I met the guy who's going to be producing my record in a restaurant. We were serving people and we just got talking, and it turns out he does this. And I'm like, that's crazy, you know? But that's what it's about. Like, you never know who you're talking to, who they're connected to, as you say, and where it might lead. And it's, I think a certain amount of, you got to be bold as well. I'm sure when it came to pursuing your goals, you had to throw yourself out there a lot and be like, hey, I'm so-and-so, I'm pursuing this, I'm trying to do this, if you can help me, da-da-da-da-da, or if you know anyone. Like, you got to be a bit of a salesman. You got to do sales, you know? And you got to not be afraid to do that.
And you got to deliver. I think a lot of it about delivering. It's like, it's something to get access to the room and get a chance, but you got to be ready to deliver. Big thing.
I guess that's why it's good to use the time that you have where, like, things aren't happening to practice and be ready. Like, right now, for instance, I've got a gig coming up at the end of this month, right? And a lot of moving elements are changing around right now. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to focus on getting my original stuff learned, committed, ready, and I'm just going to go, I'm going to do it, I'm going to show these people, this is what I can do, this is my music, like, what do you think, right? And because, like, I said to myself recently, I'm going to pursue this again properly, you know? And there's little things, like, for instance, when I do that gig, I will have, like, I'll have, like, a music stand, and it will have, like, chords and lyrics and stuff on that, right? But I want to get to the point where I don't have that there at all. And I've already done it. I've already been on stage and done, like, little mini sets, like open mic nights, 15 minutes, half an hour, where I played and it was all from memory. Now, it doesn't sound like a big deal, but it is. If you want to be, like, taking this seriously, you got to commit that to memory. You got to practice. You got to get
it. For sure.
Right. And I'm working on that, and I'm doing it, and I'm this close. And it's, but that's part of it, you know, like, as you say, putting that time in and really dedicating yourself to what it is. So when you do get that opportunity, you nail it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Practice. I mean, it really, it's, craft and skills at all times, particularly in the art.
You mentioned that you performed on Broadway. Walk us through that experience and what it meant to you.
Yeah, it was awesome. I did it for quite a few years. So, you know, it's 8 shows a week on Broadway. So when you're working for the shows, you get to do a lot of them. You know, the every show is different and has a different vibe. But the once people are in that, you know, Broadway musician circle, it's very nice. You know, you get to run into people you've played with over here, you've played with over there. People are always changing. There's a lot of subbing happening. So it's really nice because you go in on this show for a matinee and on that show for an evening, and it's a great time. And then the shows are fun. There's some downtimes. It's a lot of pressure at first when you're first learning a show, and you really have to perform well. I mean, there's no way around it. You know, you can have some minor mistakes. can't have big mistakes. If you have one, it better be the one big mistake you've ever done in that show. So people are hard on themselves. I mean, you know, like even people who have played the same shows for 6 years, they'll be like, oh, today I just did you hear that one thing I did. I mean, there's a very high level of, you know, how much you have to be really, really strong at all times. So you very, you know, that pressure and you're very focused.
So what happens when they do make these mistakes? Do they just get like fired or is it like really that strict?
You won't get, well, there's two things, you know, if it's your own Broadway show, for people who have their own Broadway show, they probably won't get fired. I mean, if it happened one time, you know, we're still humans. So maybe, you know, somebody will make a little comment, but people know, they know that they messed up. But if it's not their show, if you're subbing on the show and you made such a big mistake, yeah, you may not be called back. You know, I mean, or maybe you'll be called back one more time, but you better nail it. I mean, you know, like they say in music, it's like you're only as good as your last show.
When you say subbing as well, do you mean like, as in like, so the person whose role, who fulfills that role normally isn't there and you're just temporarily taking over? Is that what that is?
Yeah. So on Broadway shows, musicians are allowed to sub out 50% of the time.
Ooh,
okay. And there are a lot of subs playing Broadway shows all the time. Keeps it fresh.
No, it's just interesting that you can do that. Like,
it's not the case in London, actually. London is a lot stricter with the West End and what they're allowed to do. They can't sub out as much, if at all. And then in Paris, they usually double team. So it's not a strict subbing per se. They actually have two teams per show, like two teams, and then they alternate.
I also wanted to ask, because you mentioned that you're a conductor. This just fascinated me. I just have quite a lot of questions about this. How did you become a conductor? Like, how does one become a conductor?
Yeah, well, ideally you take classes in school.
Okay.
And to learn the art of it. And for Broadway, it's different, and musical theater in general, because a lot of times people will be conducting from a keyboard, because you actually do still have some things to play, maybe some effects to trigger. And so the conducting is going to be, instead of being just, you know, hands and you're standing on your podium and you've got your orchestra, now you're at a keyboard. So it's a lot of head nods. It's a lot of one hand conducting while the other is playing and switching between them, you know, in the middle of a measure. And of course, like opera and musical theater, you're conducting not just the orchestra, but the cast, you know, and they're usually above you, you know, the cast up here, the orchestra is down there, and you're the bridge between them. So there's a lot to it, for sure.
Forgive my ignorance, but like, whenever I've tried to understand the importance of a conductor, like, I guess my biggest question is like, I understand that they're bringing in, essentially everyone is watching them and waiting for cues to come in and stop and et cetera. That's kind of, they're guiding that. But then I look at it like, okay, assuming you know this music off by heart, right? Then surely you would already know when to come in and when to come out, etc. So why do we need the conductor? Like, what is the importance of the conductor?
Even just to get people to be at the same tempo. Because, you know, when you're doing this, you're not just saying start now, you're saying start now with this speed. So just that in and of itself. Otherwise, it's like you're having a car race without anyone giving the go. Who won? You know, so just already knowing when to start and at what speed to start, so we're all together, that's a big one. The second one is just to, you know, dynamics and musicality. You know, it's easy for musicians to just get in their thing, you know, and you're there making sure that everything is continuing to be at a certain level at all times. You're giving notes. I mean, you know, at the end of every show, you're actually going around and you may have notes for different people. Maybe not many, but you're listening. You're paying attention to the whole. Their job is to pay attention to what they're doing. And in relation to others, but your role is there to ensure the whole is working and to take whatever is necessary, you know, and whatever necessary step to make sure it stays there. Conductors do a lot. I mean, mostly if you don't have a conductor for a Broadway show, that Broadway show is canceled that night. They cannot do it.
Damn.
And same with Metropolitan Opera. I mean, same with orchestras, you know, as soon as it's big. There are some exceptions, you know, in the history of classical music where you had Mozart was conducting some of his own concertos. So, and again, but that's because they were actually conducting from the piano. which is very much what Broadway conductors are doing now, just different style of music. So in smaller ensemble, if you've got 12 or 16 piece, people can still see you even though you're at your instrument. You may have an instrumentalist, sometimes some, you know, a string player, like the concert master will be conducting. So that happens sometimes, but size matters. Like if you suddenly have a 40 piece orchestra, nobody's playing the piano. You know, you need to be standing on your podium just for sheer visibility. So a lot comes into play, but it's very important. Somebody needs to lead, you know. But, you know, just think if you go on vacation with one other person. I mean, how many conversations do you need to have to know where you're having lunch? You know, it's much easier if somebody is like, okay, today I'm taking the lead, and then tomorrow you're taking the lead. Yeah, you need a lead as soon as you've got people together.
And it was so democratic. What would you say are your sort of best and worst performances?
Oh, I can tell you the worst, I would think. Yeah, I think I'll choose. I have two, but I'll pick one of them. So I was playing at School of Rock, and I played that show. I was there the whole summer, so it was like a lot of shows. I had been playing there for years, so I really knew the show very well. And the conductor was a trickster that sometimes in the middle of the show would act like it was the beginning of a song and the musician wasn't on it. So he would just go to like a guitarist and be like, "What? Aren't you ready? Go, go, let's go." And he would do these jokes a lot. And because I had been there for so long, I was so used to him doing those jokes. And a lot of times Broadway shows, you've got this dialogue. So everybody's doing something else in between, particularly when you're not, nobody can see you. So, you know, people on their phones, they're reading, they're working on a project in between songs. And you trust that the conductor will, you know, kind of wringle everybody back when it's time to get ready to go. But that one time I had these four bars that were solo. And so the lead actor comes from behind a sofa and he's like, we see him hiding. And I would go, bum, 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 bum. And he like peeks out of the sofa and I go, bum, 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 bum. Well, this one time, I don't know what I was doing. And suddenly the conductor is like, Geraldine, Geraldine, Geraldine. And I'm like, I know this joke. You've told it 100 times. I know it's not for me. Sure enough, I was supposed to be playing my solo. And so the actor was like, with no music, which is fine, I guess, but the conductor did not think it was fine. He was really mad at me. And then I think he made me go to the actor to apologize. And the actor was laughing. It was like, it was no big deal. Who cares? But yeah, it was kind of an oral. I really got in trouble for that one a lot. And then I was forbidden to like use any device.
But that was his fault, though, because he was creating a culture of like, jokes, so you expect I thought that's not fair, really.
I'll say it might be a shared I still was not paying attention enough to like
All right, fair enough.
I had to go, so a shared responsibility maybe, but that's really scary. I mean, when you realize you're supposed to be playing and you're not, you know, it's like your heart drops. I do feel bad. I mean, if I had to do it again, I would do better.
We spoke here and there about the music industry. I'd like to kind of explore that with you a bit more. What would you say are the biggest misconceptions surrounding the music industry?
Oh, I don't know, because I've been in it for so long. I'm not even sure what people who are not in it think about it. I suppose what I see, and again, this is me coming from, you know, you're coming from the side of the bands. I'm very much coming from the side of sidemen, you know, people who are professional performers behind, you know, either in the pits or in orchestras or not front people. So that kind of industry. I think a lot of people kind of want their breaks. And I was one of them, right? I didn't live in New York City, and I would tell people in New York, like, oh, if you ever hear like anyone needs somebody for their Broadway show, like let them know I'm available. I'll come to New York. Well, obviously everybody will come to New York for a Broadway show, but you forget that you've got to put in your, you know, the different levels of gigs in between. So it, you know, you're going to be trusted with this thing. And then if you do well, you're going to be called again for this other thing that's a little bit more. And then you're going to be, you know, it's pretty rare that suddenly you want your dream gig just handed to you. And some people I've interviewed for even a long time ago, that somebody said in England, he had worked with the biggest bands and done their shows on the West End. And he said, you don't want to be given these opportunities to you before, because you're not ready. You got to put in the time, because the time you're putting in gets you ready to that level of, because again, it's a very high level of pressure. It's a very high level, like, well, the example we were giving, right? So I messed up. What happened the rest of the show? I didn't mess up. You know, I wasn't messing up before, but I didn't mess up, you know, and it's like, there was a lot of pressure. The conductor was very upset with me, and very clearly so. It changed the whole vibe of the room. But we still had a show to continue for an hour in that environment, and you can't let that, you can't crumble under that. You cannot suddenly lose it. So that's where the time and the practice really helps, because then you'll learn to really, you know, keep things going no matter what happened.
Oh yeah, the show must go on. Absolutely. Yeah. I had it the other day. I messed up a, what was it I messed up? I was doing like a cover of Roadhouse Blues by The Doors, and I must have played that song like a million times. But for some reason, I was just playing the wrong part. And I was singing in key. And I was pulling it off. But I was like, what am I doing? In my head, I'm like, what am I doing? I'm like, all right. And then it's like, okay, head through to the end. Just get through to the end. Just finish. And I did. And it was good. And I ended on like a cool note. And then I immediately just said like, and that's how you cover a fuck up. But it was, do you know what I mean? Like, you're right. Like, you can't just stop and be like, I'm sorry, guys. End of song. You just have to get through it.
Right. Yeah, I think the other thing that might be, you know, misconstrued is that musicians don't work. Like, there's not a lot of work for musicians. You know, if you're really talking to non-musicians and their perspective, if you say you're a musician, people assume you make no money and you're not that busy. And all the professional musicians I know, it's the opposite. They're working nonstop. They're not taking vacation days. They don't have they don't have one day off. They're just working nonstop. And a lot of times, very long days. I mean, like, I've seen people work 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. because if it's a Sunday, so say it's a pianist, they're going to go play church from 8 a.m. to maybe noon. Then they go to their Broadway show at 2 p.m. Maybe they'll have a student between, you know, 5 and 6:30, and then they'll go play another show. I mean, it's a grind, and it's Jeez. In a good way. Like, you know, being a professional musician is being very busy. I had my teacher when I did my master's. She said, it was so busy. I was like, well, how do you practice then? She said, I have practiced for other concerts in the intermission of a concert. And wow. That story never left me. And then I found myself doing the same, having to, like, I would arrive to be ready for a concert, and then I'm practicing something else in the meantime, because there's no time. You're like, this is the only chance I've got with an instrument in between the schedules. So there's a reality to that for the sidemen, for sure.
That's crazy, man. How do you not get like mixed up with the songs? Like,
you're checking 100 times.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You're like checking again and again. You're like, you arrive. I mean, the first thing I've always done with any kind of concerts, it doesn't matter if it's like a fourth grader, 8 a.m., you know, recital, or if it's like you arrive and you take the sheet of, like, you know, the order of songs, and then you're checking again. Like, okay, I want to make sure. You know, a little bit OCD, but you have to be.
What has music taught you about life?
You know, I started so young that I don't know who I am without it. Like, I don't know what would I have. I don't know. Like, it's like saying, what would it be like if you were an only child, or like if you, you know, didn't have your siblings? You're like, you don't know. You've always had them. I would think perseverance. If I take a guess, because, you know, you're a musician, you're so used to practicing and repeating. So, like, not a lot of things, you know, like in the corporate world, a lot of people can get down on themselves really quickly. Like, oh, I made an error or something. But for musicians, you're used to, oh, let me try again. 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 And you just don't stop. You're just like, oh, I'm not, it's not like I'm succeeding or not. It's like, how many tries away am I from getting to the result I want? Because that's what happens with your instrument, right? You can do the song, you can do the song. And at some point, you can do the song. So,
no, that's a really powerful sentiment right there, man. Like, that you can carry over into anything. It's true. We do punish ourselves for mistakes. But yeah, as a musician, it's like we were talking before about messing up on stage. Like, I don't go like, oh, no, I'm never going to set foot on stage again. I'm just like, it happens. So what? You know, keep going. Absolutely. What advice could you give to aspiring musicians?
Definitely get your skills very specifically good. So if you're classically trained and you want to get on Broadway, get really good at those styles, you know, pop, rock, soul, all those styles. It's not just about the ability to move the fingers and dynamics, but also the actual genre of music really matters. make sure, you know, every just level up. I mean, literally level up wherever you are. If you're thinking you're good enough, wrong. Level up, like work it, get to a higher level, no matter when in your career. I mean, the people, you know, in my book, they've had careers of like 30 years, 40 years playing with the biggest artists. They're out there practicing and getting new things and doing new exercises and, you know, getting back things they haven't done in a while. I mean, it's nonstop. And then, you know, talk to people. Like, if you're not in the industry yet, get to know people so that people know your name. Start working, start getting some open doors. You know, that's very important.
Let's talk about your book, because we've kind of hinted at it now. I think it's time we talk about it. It's called The Pulse of the Musician, a book that offers people an insider's guide to life in the music industry. So what would you say are the sort of the key themes that you're exploring in this? Why should people buy this book?
Yeah, well, it makes you feel good about yourself no matter where you're at in anything you're doing, is the feedback I've been receiving from readers a lot. They're like, I'm not a musician, and I loved it, and it made me reconnected to passion and things I care about. For musicians and aspiring musicians, it just gives you a lot of clear how-tos, because it's a lot of conversations, and it shows you, you know, how to save your money while you're on tour, or and why you should, or like what kind of path are you most is best for you. There's so many different musicians' paths. You could have a full-time job as a musician, work in an orchestra. You can work, it's true. You can, you know, be working in giant stadiums if you love to perform. If you don't like the crowd, you can be working full-time in a studio as a freelancer, but you'll just be in the studio recording stuff all the time. There's so many different paths of genres and of day-to-day lives. So that's really helpful. And then for musicians who have been professionals for a long time, it's just nice to read what's in other people's minds, you know, and in other genres that you're not doing as well. So it really can be read on so many different layers by so many different people. You get lots of stories, which people really connect to as well. So, yeah.
What was the most surprising interview that you had?
It was one of the most surprising. I don't know. The first thing that comes to mind is Joe Kwon from the Avett Brothers, because he was trained fully classical and then quit for a good while, like ended up not graduating in music and did something else, and then came back around to music thanks to his roommate at the time when he was in his 20s, who was like, oh, I want to play, like, do you want to kind of play with? And that's how he started playing by ear. And then that's how he ended up in the Avett Brothers. And you're like, what were the odds of that happening? So that was a cool story. But there's so many like that. I mean, the amount of people that quit for a while, came back to it, or that studied a special genre and then worked in another, or work across different genres. So there's a lot of it like that. But I really like that one because obviously it's the Avett Brothers. It's impressive. And you wouldn't think from his background that he would have ended up there. And he's perfect for it. I mean, he's just incredible. So I would think Joe Kwon.
What's the best advice you've ever received?
Ooh, I have to think on that one. I don't know if it's a piece of advice, but the quote that I refer to all the times, and that's actually I put in the book because I love it so much, is you don't get to success. You get lifted up to success.
Yeah.
Like, you don't reach it. You get lifted up to it. And that was very true in my case. You know, it's like, people helped me get there. People gave me chances. People gave me the feedback I needed when I didn't want it and when it hurt to hear it. And I, you know, people took me under their wings and showed me how they were doing things. And that's how it works for the whole industry. I mean, no one is anywhere just without anyone having given them a chance. So
1000%. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's true, not just in the industries you're hoping to go into, but look at the people supporting you, look around you, look, the people that are singing your praises, the people that believed in you from day one, the people that continue to support you day in and day out. Look at those people, be thankful for those people. Thank you. It's something I've certainly taken for granted, and I intend to not anymore. I'm very grateful for the people that believe in me and are pushing for me to succeed, because it's like they're invested in that journey, you know, they're invested in who you are, and when you do achieve those goals, and it will happen somewhere down the line, you can look and go like, hey, like we did this. It was like, it's no one ever gets to the top on their own. That's just impossible.
I agree.
And if they say anything other than that, then they're lying. It's so true. You have to, like, people have to open doors for you, but that's not to say that, like, you haven't been banging at that door for years.
Exactly.
What's the biggest life lesson you've learned so far?
I think it would circle back to our conversation around goals. Goals are helpful to have. The journey is important to have. The journey can change your ultimate goal. The goal at the end of having achieved it might not be all you thought it would be. It will be different. So I think it's a matter of, like, set the path ahead and prepare for it to not look the way you anticipated it, and be willing and flexible to change as you go.
Solid stuff. Thank you. Final question for you. Do you have any upcoming projects or final thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I have a concert coming up at 54 Below that I'm pretty excited about, just because it's fun to perform on a stage. So that'll be in May, May 28th. I'm excited about that. And then I'm just excited about the book because it just came out a couple months ago. So people are, you know, sharing their feedback with me a lot now. And it's nice to hear what it's doing for their heart. So I think that's where I'm living with it at the moment.
Man, massive congratulations to you, man. It's huge. Like, just in general, just publishing a book, that's a life achievement, isn't it? It's like something, and it's great that it's helping people to achieve the thing that, you know, that you achieved. You know, you're giving back. And I think that's so important with anything creative that you do in life. Like, certainly that's what I try to do with what I'm doing, is like, I want it to always help people. It's not all about me. It's about how are these things helping other people?
Yes. This is the book I wish I had when I was getting started. That's how it started, because I was looking for this information and it was nowhere. And I can do a great online search and it was not anywhere. And so this is really the result of me looking for answers for myself at the time, and then now sharing the answers. So yeah, it really does come from a place of wanting to help.
Thank you for doing it, man.
Thank
props
you.
To you. Yeah, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for sharing, you know, an insight into your life and just your knowledge, really. I think for any musicians listening, this is going to be a valuable show, so thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. And to all the listeners of the Christian Reeve podcast, I want to take a second to just say a massive thank you for listening over the years. As I mentioned earlier, I've been thinking a lot about what it actually means. I know there's people that listen to this show week in and week out, and that's huge. Thank you so much for doing that. A lot of time and effort goes into this show, and yeah, I'm not going to take it for granted anymore. I appreciate you guys, because you don't have to listen to the show, and you do, and you choose to keep listening. And I'm glad that you're getting something out of it. And I do too. You know, for the longest time, I think I was too caught up on metrics and all that stuff. And to be honest, I'm proud of what we're doing here and how the show is progressing each and every week. And I just love to talk to people and gain an insight into their lives and share that with you. So thank you so much for listening. And until the next time, be safe, be well, and I'll see you in the next one.